Ron Ananian.
There's no car out there that can't be fixed. It just takes some thought.
Thank God for American cars. Every little thing you do.
The Car Doctor.
Where the boot's open and the grease is contaminated and all that grit's already, road grit is inside the joint. You know, the damage is done.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian. The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Again, 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's 24-7 phone number, 855-560-9900. Why is it 24-7? Because you can call that number anytime, day or night. Leave a message. If we're not on the air, we're live 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday afternoons, East Coast time. But you can call the aforementioned 855-560-9900. Leave a message, and executive producer Tom Ray will call you back and get you in the queue for the next live show. And that's what we want to do. We want to talk to you up here on air about your car and its problems and educate everybody as we continue to try and fix all the broken cars in America today. We want to welcome a new affiliate to the Car Doctor family before we kick off this hour. Yep, that's right. We just keep growing. I don't know. The sky's the limit. 1590 WPSL, Port St. Lucie, Florida. They actually wanted us to come down there and do a live remote, but I said, no, Tom Ray in a bathing suit probably really wouldn't be a great thing, so I turned him down. I said, there's no way we're doing that. I've seen Tom's legs before.
You know I'm a chick magnet.
Well, yeah, you're a chick magnet, all right. They see you and they repel. They just, the other direction, it's, you know, polarization in the other direction. But anyway, we welcome 1590 WPSL, Port St. Lucie, Florida. We thank them for taking the show and helping us spread the cause, and we'll do our best. We absolutely will. Let's kick the garage doors open. Let's get over to, let's go to Melvin in Baltimore and see what's going on here. Melvin, 03 Honda Civic, overheating. Was that you on the side of the road Sunday, Memorial Day weekend that I saw out by the White Marsh Highway, White Marsh Mall?
No, it wasn't me.
Just checking.
Yeah, but I'm having a problem. You know, my cooling is going over to the reserve, but it's not coming back, and the reserve is filling up.
Okay.
But everything works. The heat works. You know what I'm saying? The air works.
Do the cooling fans come on, Melvin?
Yeah. When I turn my AC on, it comes on. And when it, I guess, you know what I'm saying, when the engine gets up to temperature, they kicks on for, you know what I mean, a few seconds, and then it goes off.
So give me the scenario. Is it you start out first thing in the morning, you're driving down the road cold. Is it that, you know, after 10, 15 minutes, it just starts to boil over and overheat? Do you physically see steam? Does the gauge pin?
No.
Give me the exactly. How do you know it's overheating?
Because the temperature gauge go up. You start going up towards the high.
Okay, so the temperature gauge does go up. And I don't want you to lift the hood when it's hot. I always have a concern about lifting a hot hood on a hot car that's overheating. We already know it's overheating. But if you were, have you felt the upper and lower radiator hoses? Is one hot, one cold?
The upper one is usually the hottest.
Okay. How hot is hot? Uncomfortable to hold?
Once I put my hand on it, after I see it going up, yeah, it's uncomfortable to hold. But the lower one is, you know what I mean, I can hold it.
Okay. And, right, the lower one you can hold, it's cool or warm to the touch.
Right.
What sort of repairs have been tried already?
I changed the thermostat.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. Okay. I was thinking about the sensor right next to the thermostat.
Well, yeah, right. The cooling fan temp switch on the thermostat housing is a common failure also. All right?
Right.
We know the cooling fan runs. What you could try, all right, we could do this a couple of ways. Do you have access to a scan tool of any kind?
No.
All right, so let's do this old school simple. If you just let the car sit there and idle, when the temperature gauge gets roughly halfway up the scale, does the fan come on and stay on by itself without air conditioning? Forget air conditioning for a minute.
No.
So you don't see the fans run unless you turn on the AC?
No, I see the fans run, you know what I mean, because I turn the car on and they're idles. Like you say, idles, you know what I'm saying? They click on, you know what I'm saying, for a couple, you know, probably for about a half a minute or so or less, and then they're cut off.
Right.
You know?
But if you're...
But usually I can drive for, like almost 2 hours before anything starts happening, because like I say, the coolant's going into the reserve, but it's not going back through the system.
Right,
you know,
but hear me out a second, Melvin. If you let the car, if you start the car up and let it idle, will the car overheat sitting there? Will the temperature gauge go up and overheat sitting there?
Probably about that. If I let it run like that for probably like an hour and a half, just let it run it like that.
In that hour, time period, does the cooling fan come on?
Yes, it clicks on.
Does it?
You know
does
I mean?
It come on
it
and,
on and off.
Does it come on and stay on when the temperature gauge gets over half scale? Does the cooling fan come on and stay on?
No.
Okay.
No.
So the first problem is you're seeing the fan cycle, but you're not seeing them stay on when you need it the most when the engine's hot.
Right.
Okay. When it overheats, even with the new thermostat, is one hose hot and the other hose cold?
I haven't, you know what I mean, because, like, I haven't really been driving it, you know what I'm saying, far.
Right,
you know
but so here's what you got to do. Then let's baseline this, all right? Let's baseline this, all right? Step one, step one, take the radiator cap off when the engine's cold. Make sure it's got enough coolant in it, all right? I want to just mention that there is a near bleed procedure for that engine when you do a thermostat, and you need to do that if you haven't done so already. You'll find it in a service manual. There's a bleeder on the engine. There should be, or you're going to use a coolant overflow funnel and burp it that way. That's number one. Number two, proper coolant level. Number three, run the car till the car warms up. Temperature gauge gets to half or slightly two-thirds scale. That's approximately where the fan's going to come on. When the engine's warm, if you've got good circulation, if the stat's open, it's not airbound, upper hose will be hot or painful to the touch. One of them's going to be hot to the touch. The other one's going to be cold. It's usually the upper is the warm one. All right? As long as you've got good circulation, we can eliminate a radiator as a potential issue. And the fact that this happens sitting there at idle and we don't get proper, it sounds like we're not getting proper fan operation. Let's go chase the cooling fan. Unplug the coolant temperature switch on the thermostat housing. Put a jumper between the green wire on the switch and the black ground wire. The fan should run. If the fan runs, then you want to try and figure out, you've got to sort of make sure, is the radiator not restricted? And where is engine temperature? This is where you're going to need a scan tool or some way to measure temp. The temp sensor has to be 194 degrees, and that's when it turns the fan on. So at that point, if you have no tools, maybe the cheapest guess is a temp switch. Best guess. Make sure you buy a good quality part. Make sure you get it from a reliable source. If you've got an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you, stick your head in the door and say, hey, here's what I got. Here's what I need. What do you have that works? And you can probably find more information out online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Do it that way, and then at least we're going in a logical order. But be careful how you think of this. Don't think, well, it's 2 hours and the coolant flows this way and that way. No. Let's get the fan to work. The fan should be able to control that temperature unless, A, the fan's bad, or, B, the thermostat's an issue. And this is on the assumption we don't have other cooling system problems such as, A, a head gasket. But I want to get through the fan cycling first, one step at a time, before we have to get into the hardcore stuff. Do that this week. Call me back next week, and we can talk about it and go from there. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming right back. Don't go away.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's go over to Steve Cook, my brother from another mother out in Cincinnati. Steve, how are you today?
All right, how you doing, buddy?
All right, sir. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I just thought I'd give you a call. You've probably noticed this, and I've been noticing this a whole lot around here. You're driving down the road and you look over at the person next to you, And what do you see in a passenger compartment there is in the passenger side? You see someone kicked back with their feet up on the dash, or you see them hanging outside the window, or even the driver with their feet hanging outside the window, you know. And I just want to let people know that's a really, really, really bad idea.
Well, and it's bad on a lot of fronts, right, Steve? If it's an airbag car, you're going to blow your ankles off if you get into a collision, if you're not wearing your knees and your eye sockets. And if it's not an airbag car, you're going to be wearing your knees and your eye sockets anyway because, you know, it's not how they intend you to ride in a seat, right?
Right. What I was going to say is as you mentioned, you know, when they engineered restraint systems on these vehicles, they're designed to work with you sitting in a certain position. If you recline that front seat and you got your feet up on that dashboard and you're involved in an accident, your body is going to try to slide underneath that seatbelt, number one. So if you've got a shoulder strap on you, you're probably going to start hanging yourself. And as you're sliding underneath there, like you said, that airbag goes off. It's going to shove your legs right back into your face, and it's going to hurt you big time.
Oh, yeah, if it doesn't kill you.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of accidents around here like that, and it is really, really not pretty. It's just it's just not a good idea to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, years ago, and I've told this story before on air, so I'll tell it quickly, is I attended a state police traffic safety function, and they had this trailer-like device that they towed around from event to event. It was called the Believer, if I remember right. This is 25 years ago. And you sat in this chair on a slight incline, and they strapped you in, and it duplicated an impact in a vehicle at, I think, 7 or 10 miles an hour. The amount of force that you display onto those seatbelt straps at 10 miles an hour is I actually had little black and blue marks that formed the next day. So they said, now imagine that at 50 and 60 miles an hour, and imagine if you weren't strapped in, where you would end up, and that's what the seatbelt is supposed to do. So they design cars, you're absolutely right, they design the safety element of cars to one specific direction. This is how it's supposed to work, and when it doesn't, it's a real big issue. So, but yeah, absolutely, yeah. Steve. Absolutely, we appreciate your input. So, hey, let me ask you real quick before I let you go. How are book sales going? You know, I should tell everybody who this is. This is Steve Cook, author of OBD2 Diagnostics Made Easy. How are book sales doing, Stephen?
They're doing okay. It could probably be a little bit better, but yeah. You know, it's coming along.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write that book?
About 2 years.
Yeah. And how long?
Yeah, it took me about 2 years.
Well, I was thinking. I was thinking it took you how long you are as a technician and now an instructor, right? How many years you're in the field?
Oh, that's 30 years.
Right. So you know the book really took 30 years to write, just two to put it on paper. So you got to think of it like that. There's a lot of good information in that book. There really is. You know, it's just amazing. I think you did a great job, and your daughter did a wonderful job illustrating it. That's up online, right, Steve? Amazon?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's also, you can get it on eBay as well.
Okay.
You know, either place. So, but, you know, I appreciate you giving some of those copies away to your listeners and stuff too.
You know what? They gobbled it up like a sponge in water. And, you know, it's clear because it's the quality of the information, brother. We're always glad to help the cause. So,
well, maybe we can go ahead and get a few more to you sometime in the future.
We should actually do an interview, which is what we really wanted to do. So you should really talk to Tom. We could talk a little bit about the book, maybe take some chapters and excerpts and cover it. But we're always glad to, you know, Steve, we're always glad to help extend the education of the motoring public and the technicians that are out there, because we learn from them, they learn from us. It's always an equal exchange of information. So, by all means, listen. Let me run. Yeah. Phones are backed up, but as always, good to hear from your brother. And whatever we can do to help you, let us know. All right.
All right. Sounds good. You take care now.
You too. Bye bye. Let's go over to Wayne in Delaware. Wayne, Ron and Annie, and the Car Doctor at your service, sir. How can I help?
Yes, sir. This is Wayne from Millsboro, Delaware. I have a question. I have a 2005 Crossfire.
Okay.
Chrysler Crossfire.
Right.
Purchased it a couple months ago. Took it in for front end alignment. Both front coil springs, the last 4 inches on both sides of the springs were broken off. Was there a recall on any of the coil springs on the Crossfires?
There was on some of the Chryslers. I don't recall the Crossfires offhand, but then they weren't such a mass-produced car that I don't know that it would generate a recall on its own. What you could do is you could take the VIN, you can take the serial number, the 17-digit serial number found on the vehicle registration, and go out to NHTSA, NHTSA.gov, National Highway Traffic Safety Authority.gov, and they have a section there where you can plug in your 17-digit VIN. And it will tell you any open recalls on the vehicle, any pending investigations, and so on. The government has actually stepped up its game in the last 2 years and made it very consumer-oriented in the sense that they're trying to get the word out before it becomes a bigger issue. After the Toyota acceleration debacle, after some of the other recalls, the airbag, the Takata airbag recall that's gone on in recent years. That's why if you go back, and I forget the numbers, but I think it was... And I'm going to guess here, I don't remember exactly, $3,000 a vehicle for a recall fine to the car companies. It's now $30,000. It's some they exceeded the fine or raised the fine level by 10 times, whatever the number was. So now it's very, very, very costly for car companies to get recalled or to get fined for a recall that should have happened. And they've really stepped up their game. But NHTSA...
They tell me that there was no recalls on a 2005, but it's amazing that both of them broke in the same increments on each side, it was unbelievable.
Well, and keep in mind, part of the reason why that, a Crossfire is a low-volume car, right? They didn't sell that many of them. And the issue there becomes that, depending upon how many sold, it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game. How many do they sell? How many will they sell? And, the other thing you have to think about with that car is be glad you can still get parts for it. It's now 15 years old, and, that becomes an issue. So, that's part of the problem, too, on buying a low-production car like that. Keep an eye on NHTSA, Wayne. You never know when that might appear. And for everyone else out there, if you're like Wayne from Delaware, keep in mind, if you've got an older car, you're looking for parts, or you got a newer car, Omnicraft, all right? Omnicraft does represent... parts now as far as being able to get parts, and they allow you to purchase parts and parts coverage for older vehicles. And this segment of the Car Doctor is brought to you by Omnicraft. You'll find more out online at omnicraft.com. You can keep in mind that if you're looking for good quality aftermarket parts from a reliable source, think Omnicraft now. Omnicraft complements the Motorcraft and Ford Parts line of replacement parts by providing parts solution for most makes and models. A trusted relationship just got better between you and your parts supplier. I'm Ron Ananian in the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor here. Let's get over and talk to Douglas in Nebraska, 07 Honda. Hey, Douglas, how can I help you, sir?
Well, Ron, I had my mechanic at work brought in this 2007 2.4, and while he had it idling, he knew the timing chain because it threw the code for the cam sensor.
Okay.
And it quit while it was idling. So he went ahead, he's a really good mechanic, he went ahead and put the timing chain on and found out that idling in the bay, it bent the valves.
Okay.
So now I bought the car from the employee of ours, and I'm wondering if I can take the head off without taking the timing cover off. Take the gears off the cams. I know I got to slide them ahead, take the cams out. There's one bolt that goes to the chain guide that I know I can get at. And I'm just wondering if I can get that.
Yeah, what you want to do is you want to pull the head the way we used to old school pull some of the old Ford dual overhead cam motors and where we wired the sprocket
well, like
to the chain.
The Cobalt, the Chevy,
right.
You can take the head off that four-cylinder without.
Right.
Because I know he did the guy's really did the timing chain correct. Everything's right.
Right.
It was just a coincidence that it bent them damn valves sitting there idling.
Right. Yeah,
and
I
bought all the new valves, got everything I needed to do the deal. But I'm just wondering, because he goes, I don't know, I just glued that on. You might have a hell of a time getting that time cover off.
Well, I'm gonna try it. How are you gonna lock the tensioner in place, Douglas?
There's a access hole in the front cover,
right.
Where I can pull it back and put a pin in there.
Right. Okay. As long as you're
and
aware
I'm
of that.
I'm thinking I could take the two cams off and pull them out of the gears.
Right.
Because I know the variable timing cam sticks out quite a ways, so I get the cams out.
Here's...
And then the only thing is to get that seal off that goes to the variable valve timing gizmo,
which is
just glue.
Right. And here's what you have to think of. You have to think of it like this. The car is already broken. You can't break it any more than it is, brother. So just common sense. Just, you know, tie the sprockets to the chains, lock the tensioner, get everything up out of the way. You know, once you open up that cover, if you can somehow stuff a rag or a clean shop towel underneath the sprockets so nothing falls down into the motor, right? Just from the sounds of it, you've been doing this.
Logic.
So you know what I'm talking about. But for everyone else's benefit, why not? I can't say I've ever seen it done that way, but I get why you would want to. And it makes sense to me, you know, as long as you know that he's a trusted source. And, I mean, listen, you can also, just for giggles, before you go through all this, just, you know, line up the cam marks, make sure everything is on correctly. Not doubting
Correct.
Your mechanic, not doubting, you know, he could be Indy, he could be Parnelli Jones, but, you know, everybody makes mistakes.
Well, it's a new system, so it has them colored gears. I can put it on the marks.
Right. Put it on the marks,
you know,
and see if everything lines up. If it does,
colored on the chain.
Have at it.
You know, I've listened to you for quite a while, and I'm trying to get him to listen to you. I mean, I'm 6 years old, and anybody wants to work on a carburetor, they come to me, whatever. But this guy's a college-educated tech dude, and he's been with us for probably 6 or 7 years. And I'm really impressed with him, and I want him to start listening to you because he doesn't just put on what the engine code tells him to put on. He makes sure that it is what it is.
He's a thinker.
And I'm proud of the guy.
Yeah,
but
he's a thinker.
My life has been alignments on semis and cars and trucks, and it's like today I had a Volvo that feathered one drive axle one way, feathered the other drive axle the other way, feathered the steer tires in and inside and out. Took me 2 hours, but I had to crack the rear. It was like a foot and a half off on the rear ends. And, you know, you get something like that. You get in it to drive it into your bay, and it runs a run into the curb within 5 feet. And you get that thing done and drive straight as an arrow. I mean, there's nothing more pleasurable than that.
Yeah. Oh, well, listen, man, that's the career of working on cars, right? I was talking to Dominic yesterday. Dominic's a regular customer at the shop, and he owns an 07 Subaru, and he purchased this car used. Unfortunately, he's had a bad run of luck. He had a 2013 Subaru that was going through a quart of oil every 500 or 600 miles. He got rid of that. He purchased this 07 Subaru that now goes through a quart of oil every 400 miles, or he goes through 3 quarts in 3,000 miles, whichever way it comes out to be. Depends on the day of the week, he said. And in the conversation with Dominic, we were talking about working on cars, and I'm not sure what exactly he does. I think he's a medical technician or a medical technician repair person, something along those lines. And if you're listening, Dom, hi. But he brought up a point. He says, it must be so exciting to work with your hands every day. And I said, you know, absolutely so. I said, there's something really rewarding, even after 40-something years, that you get to work with your hands and fix something that nobody else can fix or nobody else wants to fix, or just you get the opportunity to do it. Dominic's Subaru had 140,000 miles on, and it needed front-end work. They sold it to him as a used car. It needed front-end work. But to get everything apart, I had to carefully heat everything so as not to ruin the cast, and then re-thread and tap, and, you know, quite a little bit of tedious work. And You know what? At the end of the day, there's nothing like fixing a car to make yourself feel good, and I would much rather take that. And I just had this conversation with my wife that I still like fixing cars, and I couldn't take sitting at a desk, man. I'd just go out of my mind. I appreciate the call, Douglas, and by all means, give it a shot. Try it that way, and let us know how you work out, and you know, we're glad to talk to you, and if there's anything else we can do for you in the future, you let us know. Hey, this segment of The Car Doctor was brought to you by the Professional Service Network, by the folks over at Ford. The Ford Professional Service Network is a program that's offered to independent automotive repair and service locations that purchase and install Ford Motorcraft and Omnicraft parts. And I want you to keep in mind, if you're out there as a mechanical shop, Douglas, you may want to consider this. PSN provides very unique benefits and rewards, including technical training, a resource library, because we all know we need more information, right? Good gosh, we always need more information. They give you the ability to look at promotional merchandise, product rebates, growth incentives. They help you as an independent repair shop. So you can find out more about PSN, the PSN network, from the folks over at Ford, the Ford Professional Service Network, over at FordPSN.com. You can register today. And sign on, and hey, listen, we all need good parts, we all need good information, and that's what the Ford Professional Service Network provides. You can find more, like I said, at FordPSN.com. I'm Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor. Let's go over and talk to Holly in Michigan. Holly, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Hey, my name is Holly. I'm from Charlotte, Michigan. I have a 2018 Honda Accord. It's only got 6,000 miles on it. It has an issue where the oil smells like gas, and I have two questions. One, is there a fix for this? And then two, could this ever cause an oil drain plug to fall out?
Can't cause an oil drain plug to fall out. The only way an oil drain plug is going to fall out is if it's not tightened properly. So, has the oil drain plug fallen out, is my question.
Yes, I was driving, and I had gotten this car. I never got an oil change done on it, so it must have been done before I got it. I went 4,000 miles before the drain plug fell out.
Okay, so, well, I would have to look back at the person that did the last oil change. That's, for it to just loosen up like that. What did you buy the car with, like, what, 2,000 miles on it, Holly?
Yeah.
All right. And buy it from a dealership?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, like, one of the loaner cars that Honda had.
Right. So I've got to go back to the guy that did the oil change. I mean, if it's torqued to spec, drain plugs just don't fall out. Liquid is, you know, okay. think of it like this. Liquid is liquid. Not that I would recommend anybody do this, but if you filled the crankcase with water, you know, just because there's a different liquid in there, it's not going to make the drain plug fall out. It's going to obviously cause engine damage, but it's not going to make the drain plug fall out. So
okay.
When the drain plug fell out, were they able to thread a new one in, you know, as far as, you know, the threads in the oil pan weren't destroyed or hurt? It was just something just unthreaded.
Yeah, they were able to put it back in, and it was fine.
Okay. So, and obviously a new drain plug because the old one got lost on the highway somewhere.
Yeah.
That had to be quite a mess, I'm sure. Just out of curiosity, how did you know the drain plug fell out? When the red light came on for the engine, or did you notice the road, the stain on the road you were leaving behind?
I got an emergency warning that the oil pressure was low, and it said to stop the engine.
And you did.
And then I checked the oil. There was, like, no oil.
Ouch. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you listened to the dashboard. So, back to the first question, gas in the oil.
Yeah.
What makes you think there's gas in the oil?
Well, when I put the dipstick in there and I take it out, you know, it smells like gas. And even just not even doing that, but just opening up the cap, it smells like gas.
Okay.
It doesn't smell just like oil.
How can I explain it? On a feedback engine, all engines, anything with an oxygen sensor, so engines over the last 30 years, they have the ability to control, you know, computers have the ability to control the air-fuel mixture, right? So they use something called an oxygen sensor, in simpler terms, there's other terms for it, but an oxygen sensor, it sniffs the amount of oxygen content in the exhaust, and they adjust fuel trim accordingly. They adjust how to change the mixture accordingly. Fuel in the crankcase would skew that O2 sensor reading. It would change it. And it would change it to the point that the computer could no longer accurately and correctly control fuel trim. So if there truly was excess fuel or fuel in the crankcase, period, in theory, on paper, you would get a check engine light. You would see fault codes, and you would see. So regardless of what it smells like, you know, if you really believe there's fuel in the crankcase, and I'm not saying it's impossible, the only way it could happen is poor combustion. I'm sorry, the piston rings aren't sealing properly in the engine, and they're allowing fuel charge to blow down and contaminate the oil. But, you know, does the new oil still smell like fuel, or was that the old oil, or you don't smell it anymore, or you still do?
I still do smell the gas.
Okay. Car's under warranty? Yeah.
It is.
All right. Here's what I want you to tell the service writer on Monday. All right?
Okay.
I want you to take it in, and, you know, this is a Honda dealer you bought the car from, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, you're going to take it in, and you're going to tell them, listen, remember me? I'm the oil drain plug lady. The drain plug fell out, and he'll go, yep, I remember you, and you'll have a good laugh about it. And say, listen, I'm being a little sensitive to this, and I just need you to look at this. You know, I checked the oil, and the oil smells like gas, and I'd like somebody to check it. All right? Now, whether they send a mechanic out, and you kind of want it in writing, all right? You don't want this to be done off the cuff, all right? You want to ask them to, you know, do a work order so that they physically check it. What you want to tell them is your fuel mileage is down, all right, and you're smelling fuel in the oil when you check the oil level, all right? That should generate a repair order. Let them do a repair order. Let them check it. They're probably going to come back and say there's nothing wrong with the car. That's fine. But you know what we just did? We documented it, and now it's on file. Because if for some reason this is in the early stages of fuel contaminating the oil, and 5,000 miles from now the engine fails, it's still under warranty. But if anything else happens on down the road, you've notified Honda. Honda's been, you know, here's what it is. You've got it in writing. Don't lose that piece of paper. All right? But
good.
Because there's not a lot of ways for that to get fuel fouled or oil contaminated, you know, gasoline contaminated oil. There's not a lot of ways for that to happen, short of cataclysmic or pending cataclysmic engine damage. All right? Do that, and I think that'll get you what you need. All right, kiddo?
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Holly. Good to have you today. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, back at your service. Real quick story before we go this hour. You know, the insanity of auto repair, right? I just question what it's about sometimes. Had a Toyota Prius come into the shop this week. Check engine light was on. Check engine light's been on for a while. And I always find it interesting when a Prius, right, the planet-saving car, the, you know, doesn't run as much on gasoline as it could car, has a check engine light on that's been on for a while. Because, you know, let's face it, it's a typical Prius owner is somebody that's into saving the environment. And I get that, and I respect that. And listen, I'm into the environment, too. I'm not saying I'm not. But to me, you know, driving a Prius kind of puts a bullseye on your back. You're saying, hey, I'm into saving the planet. I'm into saving gas and my carbon footprint and so on. And they've got bumper stickers on the back of the car. You know, the environment matters. Women's rights matter. You know, black lives matter. Blue lives matter. Everybody's lives matter. And I agree with all that. You know, a real spiritual, good karma kind of bumper sticker. Okay? And you look at a car like that and you say, wow, here's somebody that, you know, they do recycling and it's clean air and windmills and all the other possible choices. Check engine lights on. And I get in the car, check engine lights on, and there's a piece of black electrical tape over the light next to it, which is for the tire pressure system. And I'm scratching my head. Well, we don't want to fix that. That's too expensive. Okay. And the right rear tire, by the way, because they think the TPMS system's broken. By the way, the right rear tire had 16 pounds of air in it. So they've been driving around for he said, 3-4 months with losing air slowly. They just got tired. They put a piece of tape over it. So I diagnosed the check engine light. God's honest truth. I come back to him. I say, look, it needs X, Y, and Z. It's $1,200 to $1,500. What do you want to do? Oh, I don't want to spend that kind of money on the car. He says, can you just put another piece of tape over the light? And, you know, I don't get it. What's the point in trying to save the planet if we're not doing it on a 24/7 basis? And that's the point of this, all right? Listen, it's a mindset. Check engine lights on. I don't care what you're driving. Get it fixed. Don't put tape over it. It's not legal. It's not right. It's not moral. And it doesn't do the planet a whole lot of good. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.